We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first canto, chapter 15, the Pandavas retire timely. So you read the whole thing from the beginning to the end?
Generally, yes.
Yes? So we'll be here until tomorrow evening? I hope everyone brought their bedding with them. At least a half an hour break in the middle of the night. Shri Shukuvacha Evam Krishna Sakat Krishna Bratra Ragya Vikalpita Nana Sankaspadam Rupam Krishna Vishesha Karshitaha. Siddhi Goswami said, Arjuna, the celebrated friend of Lord Krishna, was grief-stricken because of his strong feelings of separation from Krishna. Over and above all, Arjuna's Yudhisthira's speculative inquiries. As you probably remember, the last chapter is called the disappearance of Lord Krishna. And Arjuna was pointing out all the different, or Yudhisthira Maharaj was noticing all the different ill omens that were appearing along with Arjuna, and therefore they were speculating that perhaps Krishna had disappeared. Otherwise, how could so many ill omens appear? And then, of course, Arjuna was also grief-stricken. He couldn't really tell Arjuna exactly what happened. But then he began to remember the Bhagavad Gita, and after remembering the Bhagavad Gita, therefore he came back to his original composure. So I'm just going to read, I won't read the purports, we'll just read through the verses.
We usually skip the Sanskrit.
Oh, yeah. Siddhi Goswami said, due to grief, Arjuna's mouth and lotus-like heart had dried up. Therefore, his body lost all luster. Now, remembering the Supreme Lord, he could hardly utter a word in reply. With great difficulty, he checked the tears of grief that smeared his eyes. He was very distressed because Lord Krishna was out of his sight and increasingly felt affection for him. Remembering Lord Krishna and his well-wishers, benefactions, intimate familial relations, and his chariot driving, Arjuna, overwhelmed and breathing very heavily, began to speak. Arjuna said, O King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, who treated me exactly like an intimate friend, has left me alone. Thus my astounding power, which astounded even the demigods, is no longer with me. I have just lost him, whose separation for a moment would render all the universes unfavorable and void, like bodies without life. Only by his merciful strength was I able to vanquish all the lusty princes assembled at the palace of King Drupada for the selection of the bridegroom. With my bow and arrow, I could pierce the fish target and thereby gain the hand of Draupadi. Of course, Arjuna was a very powerful personality, and the history was, as you probably know, that King Drupada had made an arrangement by which a fish would have to be pierced with an arrow, but one could not look directly at the fish. The fish was hanging, but could only be seen through a pool of water that was waving. And therefore, many of the contestants who tried to string the bow weren't able to do it, but to speak of pierce the fish. But ultimately, Arjuna was able to, Karna was the only one who was able to string the bow and at the same time hit the fish, but he didn't pierce the fish's eye.
Actually,
Karna wasn't even allowed to participate. Someone else was. Who else was the one who was able to string the bow and pierce the fish at least? What's that?
I don't think anyone.
Oh, that was at the other. That was when Lakshman was having her Swayamvara. Then Arjuna. Lakshmana. When she was having her Swayamvara. Then what happened was that Arjuna came and her fish was moving. And Arjuna was able to pierce the fish, but only Krishna could actually pierce the fish in the right place and win. So Arjuna was at least given some credit for being able to pierce the fish. But in Karna's Swayamvara, when in this Draupadi's Swayamvara, Karna was not allowed to participate because Draupadi said no one less than a Kshatriya would be able to participate. And Arjuna was dressed as a Brahmin. Karna was known as a Sutta. Because they thought his mother was Radha and his father was Adirath. But actually his father was the Sangha, which is pretty good. You can have a father who has the Sangha. And his mother was Kunti. But Arjuna was, he's giving the credit to Krishna for his ability. Of course, everyone, whatever ability we may have, ultimately Krishna is the one who should be given the credit. But Arjuna is a devotee of Krishna, and therefore he was advanced enough to realize that actually it wasn't his power, it was actually Krishna's power, which was invested within him. And we'll find out when that power was taken away, Arjuna could do nothing. Because he was near to me, it was possible for me to conquer with great dexterity the powerful king of heaven, Indradev, along with his demigod associates, thus enable the fire god to devastate the Kandava forest. Only by his grace with a demon named Maya, saved from the blazing Kandava forest, and thus we could build our assembly house of wonderful architectural workmanship, where all the princes assembled during the performance of Raja Suya and paid due tributes. The respectable younger brother who possessed the strength of 10,000 elephants killed by his grace Jarasandha, whose feet were worshipped by many kings. These kings had been brought for sacrifice in Jarasandha's Mahabhairava Jaga, but they were thus released. Later they paid tribute to your majesty. It was he only who loosened the hair of all the queens of the miscreants, who dared open the cluster of your queen's hair, which had been nicely dressed and sanctified for the great Rajasiya sacrificial ceremony. That time she fell down at the feet of Lord Krishna with tears in her eyes. During our exile, Durvasa Muni, who eats with his 10,000 disciples, intrigued with our enemies, to put us into dangerous troubles. At that time, he, Lord Krishna, simply by accepting the remnants of food, saved us by his accepting food thus, the assembly of Munis, while bathing in the river, felt sumptuously fed, and all the three worlds were thus satisfied. So as you probably know, Bhima and the Pandavas didn't get along very well with Duryodhana. And therefore, Duryodhana was always thinking of ways of harassing the Pandavas. So one time when the Pandavas were in exile, well, before their exile, one time Kunti, or actually I guess it was Draupadi, she was in the palace of Yudhisthira, he was in charge of satisfying the guests. Maybe it was Kunti. Must have been Kunti. Yeah, Kunti. And one time Durvasa Muni was the guest. So she served him very nicely. So he gave her a pot that as long as the Pandavas didn't eat, then that I guess it must have been Draupadi.
I guess
it was Draupadi. Then as long as the Pandavas hadn't taken their food, then the pot would be able to give unlimited amounts of food. So Duryodhana arranged it that Durvasa Muni, with his 10,000 followers, would go into the forest right after the Pandavas had finished their meal, and then ask for some prasadam. So Durvasa Muni is known as Asutosha. He's very easily satisfied, and he can be very easily angered. Duryodhana was thinking that if he goes there and he's angered, he'll curse the Pandavas, and therefore we don't have to worry about them anymore. So Durvasa Muni came with his 10,000 followers after they had eaten and asked for some prasadam. So Yudhisthira said, don't worry about it, that just go and take your bath, and when you come back, we won't be here. Invited out for lunch. Sorry. Come back tomorrow. So they all went to take their bath. And of course, they didn't know what to do. Even to pick 10,000 leaves from the tree would take a while. Even if you're going to give everyone a leaf. Tell them it's a magic leaf. Whatever you think it is, that's what it becomes. They were taking their bath and they were all in anxiety. Didn't know what to do. But then suddenly Krishna appeared and he asked for a little prasadam, and then Draupadi became completely frustrated. First I couldn't feed the 10,000 sages, and now God's coming, I can't feed him either. The Krishna says, no, just see if there's anything left. So they found a little bit of subject and gave it to Krishna, and he felt satisfied. And then Krishna arranged it that the whole universe felt satisfied. Even the 10,000 sages in the river were bathing. Durvasa Muni and the sages felt completely satisfied. They couldn't possibly eat anything. And they thought, here, Yudhisthira Maharaj has probably created this, formed this big feast for 10,000 people, and we won't be able to eat anything. So they snuck away. It was by his influence only that in a fight I was able to astonish the personality of God, Lord Shiva and his wife, the daughter of Mount Himalaya. Thus he, Lord Shiva, became pleased with me and awarded me his own weapon. Other demigods also delivered their respective weapons to me. In addition, I was able to reach the heavenly planets in this present body and was allowed a half-elevated seat. I guess this story goes that one time Arjuna was exiled. And while he was exiled, he was in the forest. Well, exiled in the sense that there was some arrangement, because the Pandavas had married Draupadi together, that Draupadi would stay with each Pandava for a year. And that none of the other Pandavas could go into their room when they were alone. But one time some Brahmin came and said some dacoits were stealing his cows, and Arjuna had to go into the room to get his weapons. And therefore he captured the dacoits, saved the cows, but then he voluntarily went on exile for 1 year. And it was during that time that he had met Lord Shiva in the forest, in the guise of a hunter, aboriginal hunter, And they both shot an arrow to kill a boar at the same time. Then they had a fight over who the boar belonged to. A big fight. At the end of the fight, Lord Shiva was pleased and he gave Arjuna his weapon. And then during that time, his father, Indra, came and picked him up, brought him to the heavenly planets. And there he had fought against the Nirvikara Vachas and defeated them on behalf of the demigods. So Arjuna had a lot of exciting activities. When I stayed for some days as a guest in the heavenly planets, all the heavenly demigods, including King Indradev, took shelter in my arms, which were marked with a Gandiva bow, killed a demon named Nirvikara. O King, descendant of Ajamida, at the present moment I'm bereft of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by whose influence I was so powerful. The military strength of the Kauravas was like an ocean in which there dwelled many invincible existences, and thus it was insurmountable. But because of his friendship, I, seated on the chariot, was able to cross over it, and only by his grace was I able to regain the cows, and also collect by force many helmets of the kings, which were bedecked with jewels that were sources of all brilliance. So this is referring to the time when Arjuna was cursed. Well, when he was in the heavenly planets, there was one apsara named Urvashi. Seems that Urvashi was not an ordinary apsara. She was created by Naranarayan himself. When the demigods, headed by Cupid, came to disturb Naranarayan's austerities, to break them, then Naranarayan revealed that he could create more beautiful heavenly damsels than the ones that had come to break his austerity. So including those heavenly damsels was Urvashi. So the demigods were quite fearful when Naranarayan was not disturbed by their attempts to bewilder him. At the same time, when he created all these heavenly damsels, they were afraid that they were going to be cursed. But instead, Naranarayan was so magnificent, that he gave Urvashi to King Indra. So Urvashi was like the crown jewel of the heavenly apsaras. And when Arjuna was in the heavenly planets, Urvashi approached him, had a romance, but Arjuna refused her, saying that you're just like my mother, because Urvashi had a relationship with Purvachita, Pururava, who was in the dynasty, the Kuru dynasty. So Arjuna considered her just like his mother, so she didn't appreciate that. And she cursed him that you'll become a eunuch for 1 year. So that was also a benediction, because during that year, then he was able to act as Mahabala, the dancing instructor in the courtyard, the court of King, Uttar, King Uttar. Matsya Desh. But it was King Uttar. And his daughter's name is Uttara. So during that time he was a eunuch, and therefore they didn't discover him, because no one would ever think that Arjuna would be a eunuch. And he was able to teach Uttara dancing during that time. Therefore his curse became more or less like a blessing. It was he only who withdrew the duration of life from everyone, and who in the battlefield withdrew the speculative power and strength of enthusiasm from the great military phalanx made by the Kauravas, headed by Bhishma, Karna, Drona, Shalya, etc. The arrangement was expert and more than adequate, but he, Lord Krishna, was going forward, while going forward did all this. Great generals like Bhishma, Drona, Karna, Purishrava, Shusharma, Shaila, Jayadratan, Balika, all directed their invincible weapons against me. But by his Lord Krishna's grace, they could not even touch a hair on my head. Similarly, Prahlad Maharaj, the supreme devotee of Lord Narsingadev, was unaffected by the weapons the demons used against him. It was by his mercy only that my enemies neglected to kill me when I descended from my chariot to get water for my thirsty horses. And it was due to my lack of esteem for my Lord that I dared to engage him as my chariot driver, for he is worshipped and offered service by the best men to obtain salvation. O King, his jokings and frank talks were pleasing and beautifully decorated with smiles. His addresses unto me as the son of Pritha, O friend, O son of the Kuru dynasty, and all such heartiness are now remembered by me, thus I am overwhelmed. Generally, both of us used to live together and sleep, sit and loiter together. At the time of advertising oneself for acts of chivalry, sometimes, if there were any irregularity, I used to reproach him, saying, my friend, you are very truthful. Even in those hours when his value was minimized, he, being the Supreme Soul, used to tolerate all these utterings of mine, excusing me exactly as a true friend excuses his true friend, or a father excuses his son. So I guess the idea is that whatever you say to God, someone is unlimitedly great in all respects, if you minimize him in any ways, actually considered quite embarrassing. But Krishna didn't take it like that. This Krishna is in a different mood. He's with Arjuna, he's in a mood of friendship, and therefore his friendly dealings were actually relishable by him. It's like if one is a multi-billionaire and someone comes along and says, can I give you a donation? Then usually the person doesn't take it offensively, it's kind of humorous. Sure, I'll take your donation. O Emperor, I'm now separated from my friend and dearmost well-wisher, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore my heart appears to be void of everything. In his absence, I've been defeated by a number of infidel, coward men while I was guarding the bodies of all the wives of Krishna. So after the fight at Prabhas, between the, I guess there must have been around 550 million of Krishna's relatives, but assembled at Prabhas for the sacrifice. And during that time they had taken rice, which was fermented, intoxicated, and they became intoxicated and began to quarrel with each other, and ultimately manifested as the fratricidal war, supposedly fratricidal war that killed the members of the Yadu dynasty. Arjuna was told to go to Dwaraka and take the queens because Krishna had 16,108 queens out of Dwaraka, because Dwaraka was about to be flooded and was going to go underneath the ocean. So Arjuna arrived there, took the queens, and I guess when they came onto the land, some coward men came along and decided to kidnap the queens. So Arjuna, who had defeated the greatest warriors in the universe, suddenly, when he tried to invoke the astras with his weapons, he couldn't do it. They didn't work. He did it. It's like we could get a book, you know, do it yourself, astra kit. Learn astras in 30 days. We could try to do it, but you know, probably take the bow and the arrow and it would backfire, and you know, we get a splinter or something. That was the only thing that would happen. So Arjuna couldn't even remember the mantras. They had no effect, and therefore these coward men had defeated him. And he was quite depressed about that. It's like a world heavyweight boxer. Mm-hmm. You know, after winning all the contests, he's walking down the street and some hood challenges him into a fight. Some 70-year-old punk beats into a pulp. It would be quite embarrassing. So that was Arjuna. He was the most famous warrior in the universe, practically. And suddenly, some coward men who have no training in the art of Kshatriya warfare had defeated him. Of course, as Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out, and I think probably mentions it here too, in the purport. The important point of this verse is how is it was possible that Arjuna could be defeated by a gang of ignoble coward men, and how such mundane coward men could touch the bodies of the wives of Lord Krishna, who are under the protection of Arjuna. Śrīla Viṣṇu-nāth Chakravarti Thakura has justified the contradiction by research in the Vishnu Purana and Brahma Purana. In these Puranas, it is said that once the fair damsels of heaven please Astavakra Muni by their service, were blessed by the Muni to have the Supreme Lord as their husband. Astavakra Muni was curved in 8 joints of his body, thus he used to be moved in a peculiar curved manner. The daughters of the demigods could not check their laughter on seeing the movements of the Muni, and the Muni being angry at them, cursed them that they would be kidnapped by rogues, even if they would get the Lord as their husband. Later on, the girls again satisfied the Muni by their prayers, and the Muni blessed them that they would regain their husband even after being robbed by the rogues. So in order to keep the words of the great Muni, the Lord himself kidnapped his wives from the protection of Arjuna. Otherwise, they would have at once vanished from the scene as soon as they were touched by the rogues. So, most of the time when we hear these stories, we don't really know the background. But there's always some background. But if we had to hear all the background, we wouldn't have time to hear the stories. Therefore, they usually don't tell all the background. But here's some of the background. I have the very same Gandiva bow, the same arrows, the same chariot drawn by the same horses, and I use them as the same Arjuna to whom all the kings offer their due respects. But in the absence of Lord Krishna, all of them, at a moment's notice, have become null and void. It is exactly like offering clarified butter on ashes, accumulated money with a magic wand, but sowing seeds on barren land. In other words, it has no value. Someone can certainly offer a clarified ghee in sacrifice, but if it's on ashes, the ghee would not be of any value. Or sowing seeds on barren land is useless because you lose the seeds and nothing really happens. But here it says accumulation of money by a magic wand. In other words, generally you don't get money from waving a wand. Of course, if you really had a magic wand, it might work. But we haven't found very many magic wands yet. And even most of the magic wands, if you wave them, you don't get money. If it was really a magic wand, why would he give you a piece of paper? If he gave you some gold, that would be one thing. But money, obviously whoever created it didn't know very much. O King, since you have asked me about our friends and relatives in the city of Dwarka, I will inform you that all of them were cursed by the Brahmins, and as a result they all became intoxicated with wine made of putrefied rice and fought amongst themselves with sticks, not even recognizing one another. Now all but 4 or 5 of them are dead and gone. Factually, this is all due to the supreme will of the Lord, personality of Godhead. Sometimes people kill one another, and other times they protect one another. You probably know the story, of course, that
Krishna's sons, headed by Samba, went to the sages and they dressed Samba as a pregnant lady and they asked the sages, headed by Narada Muni, what kind of child would this girl give birth to? And the sages, knowing that it was a joke, they said that this girl, or this he'll produce, will destroy the Yadu dynasty. They were very fearful, and they went back, and they found King Ugrasena, and they found out that in Samba's abdomen, or at least covering it, being covered, was a lump of iron. So King Ugrasena had this lump of iron ground up and then thrown into the ocean. And there was one little piece left, and they threw that in the ocean also. That one little piece was swallowed by a fish, and the rest of the iron was thrown into the ocean, washed up onto the shore as a pravas, and grew as reeds on the shore of the ocean of pravas. And then later on, when the members of the Iron Dynasty were intoxicated, they took those very reeds that had grown up and they beat each other with them and killed each other. And that arrow, well, that little piece of iron that was left over was made into an arrow by one hunter, Jara. And then that arrow was supposedly shot into Krishna's ankle. Foot, and then Krishna left the world having a hunter who was actually Bhriga Muni in this last lifetime, who had offended Krishna. And now, as a result of that offense, he had to become a hunter and shoot Krishna in the foot. And then, of course, all the Adi dynasties just simply went back. They were demigods. They just went back to their respective positions. But Arjuna is remembering the fratricidal war that the Adi dynasty had undergone and was lamenting about it. O king, as in the ocean, the bigger and stronger aquatics swallow up the smaller and weaker ones, so also the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to lighten the burden of the earth, has engaged a stronger Yadu to kill the weaker, and the bigger Yadu to kill the smaller. Now I am attracted to those instructions imparted to me by the Personality of Godhead Govinda, because they were impregnated with instructions relieving the burdened heart in all circumstances of time and space. So Arjuna was able to take shelter of remembering the Bhagavad Gita. So if we're feeling some distress, or if we're feeling some happiness, or we're not feeling either one of them, we can take shelter of the Bhagavad Gita. Siddhi Goswami said, that's being deeply absorbed in thinking of the instructions of the Lord, which are imparted in the greatest intimacy of friendship, and thinking of his lotus feet, Arjuna's mind became pacified and freed from all material contamination. Arjuna's constant remembrance, the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna rapidly increases devotion, and as a result, all attraction and thoughts subside. So here is Arjuna lamenting about all these things that had happened with Krishna. And here it says they were like trash in his mind. So imagine what's going on in our mind. Therefore, we can hear about Krishna from Bhagavad Gita, and certainly we can get free from many of the disturbing thoughts that go through our minds. Because of the Lord's pastimes and activities, because of his absence, it appeared that Arjuna forgot the instructions left by the Personality of Godhead. But factually, this was not the case, and again he became the Lord of his senses. Because of his possessing spiritual assets, the doubts of duality were completely cut off. Thus he was freed from the three modes of material nature and placed in transcendence. There was no longer any chance of his becoming entangled in birth and death, for he is freed from material form. On hearing of Lord Krishna's returning to his abode, on understanding the end of the Yadu dynasty's earthly manifestation, King Yudhisthira decided to go back home, back to Godhead. Kunti, after overhearing Arjuna's telling of the end of the Yadu dynasty and disappearance of Lord Krishna, engaged in the devotional service of the Transcendental Personality of Godhead with full attention, thus gained release from the course of material existence. So I guess it would be nowadays, if someone has some friend or relative who leaves their body, it's quite distressing. But if you're the friend of the Personality of Godhead and all his intimate instruction and devotees, and then he leaves, just imagine how they felt. Well, I guess that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to imagine how they felt. But it was quite devastating for them. Now they're all deciding to leave this world. But of course, they're leaving this world is not simply depression. They're leaving this world and they're going to go back to the spiritual world. The Supreme Unborn, Lord Sri Krishna, caused the members of the Yadu dynasty to relinquish their bodies and thus to relieve the burden of the world. This action was like picking out a thorn with a thorn, although both are the same to the controller. Supreme Lord relinquished the body which he manifested to diminish the burden of the earth. Just like a magician, he relinquishes one body to accept different ones, like the fish incarnation, others. When the Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, left his earthly planet in his selfsame form, from that very day, Kali, who had already partially appeared, became fully manifested to create inauspicious conditions for those who were endowed with a poor fund of knowledge. But going back to Godhead in the selfsame body, will be explained later on, in that we can be in Krishna consciousness now, even while we're in this body. And if we're actually fully conscious of Krishna, that's considered to be as good as being in the spiritual world. Maharaj Yudhisthira was intelligent enough to understand the influence of the age of Kali, characterized by increasing avarice, falsehood, cheating, and violence throughout the world, throughout the capital, state, home, and among individuals. So he wisely prepared himself to leave home, and he dressed accordingly. Sometimes, I think even in this book, I don't know, they have a picture of Yudhisthira Maharaj with the danda. It's one of those early paintings. It looks like they have all the early paintings here. I only have a few pages. We must have more paintings. They only have a few pictures at the beginning? In any case, Kshatriyas don't take sannyas, but they retired, Vanaprastha. Thereafter, in the capital of Hastinapura, enthroned his grandson, who was trained and equally qualified as the emperor master of all lands bordered by the seas, because that's Maharaj Pariksha. Then he posted Braj, the son of Aniruddha, grandson of Lord Krishna, at Mathura as the king of Surasena. Afterwards, Maharaj Yudhisthira performed a Prajapatya sacrifice, placing himself the fire for quitting household life. It means it takes some enthusiasm for doing that. Imagine if you were the owner of everything that be in Dallas.
And then you got a notice that you couldn't come to Dallas anymore. How would you feel? What to speak of, you own the entire United States, and then you couldn't come back to the United States. But Yudhisthira Maharaj, practically, he owned the whole world, which was bigger than it is now. And to get that enthusiasm to leave the world, he performed this sacrifice. Maharaj Yudhisthira at once relinquished all his garments, belt, and ornaments of the royal order, and completely disinterested and unattached everything. He then amalgamated all the sense organs into the mind, and the mind into life, life into breathing, his total existence into the embodiment of the five elements, and his body into death. Then, as a pure self, he became free from the material conception of life. Thus annihilating the gross body of five elements into the three qualitative modes of material nature, he merged them into one nescience, and then absorbed that nescience into the self, Brahman, which is inexhaustible in all circumstances. So of course, this is not necessarily physically he was doing all these things. This merging is more or less proper discrimination. That he didn't think he was earth anymore, or water, or fire. He didn't identify with his mind or his conception of life. He simply merged himself into identifying himself with Krishna. After that, Maharaj Yudhisthira dressed himself in torn clothing, giving up eating all solid foods, voluntarily became dumb, let his hair hang loose. Oh, we do the same thing with Buddhists. All this combined to make him look like an urchin or a madman with no occupation. He did not depend on his brothers for anything, and just like a dumb man, deaf man, he heard nothing. He then started towards the north, treading the path accepted by his forefathers and great men, devoted himself completely to the thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he lived in that way wherever he went. The younger brothers of Maharaj Yudhisthira observed that the age of Kali had already arrived throughout the world, and that the citizens of the kingdom were already affected by irreligious practice. Therefore, they decided to follow in the footsteps of their elder brother. But here we find that the citizens aren't abandoning the king. The king is abandoning the citizens. Because imagine if they were here, what they would think. See the Pandavas running down the street, trying to get away. So just imagine, and in the present society, everyone wants to be a king. And that society, if the king didn't have pious citizens, he would just give up the kingdom. They all had performed all the principles of religion, and as a result, rightly decided that the lotus feet of the Lord Sri Krishna are the supreme goal of all. Therefore, they meditate upon his lotus feet without interruption. Thus, by pure consciousness due to constant devotional remembrance, they attain the spiritual sky, which is ruled over by the supreme Narayan, Lord Krishna. It is obtained only by those who meditate upon the one supreme Lord without deviation. This abode of Lord Sri Krishna and the Goloka Vrindavan cannot be attained by persons were absorbed in the material conception of life. But the Pandavas, being completely washed of all material contamination, attain that abode in their very self-same body. And as it mentions in the purport, just like bell metal can be turned into the gold by an alchemical process, so in the same way, by proper initiation, one in his very life can become a Brahmin. In India, sometimes the upper class there, they think that you can become a Brahmin or even second birth if you weren't born like that. That you have to die, and if you're fortunate, you can come back as a Pujari in some temple or the family of Pujari.
like one time some devotees in the early 70s, they were visiting a temple and they were rendering some service, and priests, they were chanting Hare Krishna, and the priest was so impressed by their devotion, he came up to them and said, since you're so devoted to Lord Krishna and such nice devotees, in your next lifetime, if Krishna blesses you, maybe fortune of, you can become a pujari in India. So the devotees went back and told Prabhupada that. Prabhupada said, you should have blessed them, this pujari, that if you serve the deity very nicely, in the next lifetime you can be born in the West and become a preacher. Vidura, while on pilgrimage, left his body in Prabhas. Because he was absorbed in thought of Krishna, he was received by the denizens of the Pitri planet, returned to his original post. Draupadi also saw their husbands, without caring for her, were leaving home. She knew very well about Lord Vasudev, Krishna, personality of Godhead. While she and Subhadra became absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, attained the same result as their husbands. The subject of the departure of the sons of Pandu to the ultimate goal of life back to Godhead is fully auspicious and is perfectly pure. Anyone who hears this narration with devotional faith certainly gains the devotional service of the Lord and the highest perfection of life. So this is a good example for the householders, that as soon as you see some inauspicious omens, then you should, without telling your wife or children or anyone else, simply put on torn cloth and then head north. Because here, you'll eventually reach Canada. Well, from here, I guess you'd reach Canada. And then the North Pole. And then you'll probably turn back. But back then, people were a little bit more determined. And therefore, it was very auspicious to hear how they, without any attachment to anything material, they were able to give up their opulent material kingdom and simply fix their mind upon Krishna and go to the ultimate destination of life. So we'll stop there. We'll get to it. Any questions?
We read that Maharaj Yudhishthira decided to give up his life.
His life?
Yeah.
I mean his position. Why his life? What do you mean by his life?
I might have heard it as his life. Decided to give up his life. So I was
probably his wife. I think if that was worse than his wife. His life. He didn't give up his life. I mean, until he came, he walked and walked and walked. He was the last one to, him and the dog. Some dog met him on the way. First Sahadev fell, and Nakula fell, and then Bhima fell, and then Arjuna fell, and Draupadi fell. He kept on walking with the dog. And finally, Indra came, the heavenly king Indra came with an airplane and said, get on board the airplane, you're the only one qualified. So Yudhishthira Maharaj said, well, I can't get on because without this dog. He said, we don't bring dogs to heaven. Dogs are not allowed. Keep out. So he said, unless the dog comes, I'm not going. So I said, well, you're crazy. This dirty dog. So then it turned out the dog was actually Yamaraj. A lot of miscreants call Yamaraj a dog, but I guess in this case they're right.
I've also read that Yamaraj was Yudhishthira's father.
Yeah, sure.
So father actually came to escort his son back, is what I also read.
Came at least to test him. Yeah. It was a test. Constantly going through the test. But they passed their test. Imagine if he failed the test. It would be very bad. would be the Bhagavad Gita. Be embarrassed.
So did the other brothers not make it?
No. No. I mean, these are there's so many different Mahabharatas. But ultimately, we know that they're always with Krishna. But this is just one of the Mahabharatas. But since it's mentioned in this Srimad Bhagavatam, I don't need any more tea. Sorry. No, they all wound up, according to most of the Mahabharatas, they wound up in the heavenly planet. Even Duryodhana wound up there too. Yudhisthira and his brothers first had to see hell. At least Yudhisthira had to see hell. For not following Krishna's instruction and calling out in a loud voice immediately that Ashwatthama is dead. And therefore, because he hesitated in following Krishna's instructions, he had to see hell. But when he finally got to heaven, which was just a moment later, he found Duryodhana there and his brothers, along with his own brothers. So our conceptions of things are not always what reality is. Yes?
I was listening to a lecture by Srila Prabhupada, second chapter, Bhagavad Gita, and again talking about the same thing, that following the instructions, like in the fight, in the war, if it's a war for establishing dharma yudha, then it is not a bad thing, and you get the
benefit. It's a religious fight.
Yeah, but then does that mean? I mean, only one side can be on the right side. The other side.
Yeah, our side is the right side.
So what happens to that? So the other side. I mean, they don't get the benefit of being a kshatriya.
Well, anyone who's against us goes to hell. No, they all were benefited. Either they went to the heavenly planets, or they went back to God. Depending on their consciousness at the time of death. Because all our side went back to Vaikuntha, and their side went only to the heavenly planets. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Samaveda Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande. Well, if you were men, you would know.
We know it is a anyway.
Well, generally speaking, there's different types of intelligence. So, from the Bhagavad Gita's point of view, the intelligence necessary to understand the difference between matter and spirit is real intelligence. From the material point of view, intelligence is generally looked at as the ability to control the material nature and enjoy it. So from that aspect, you know, women are equally qualified from the aspect of being able to manipulate material energy for enjoyment. But from the spiritual point of view, the ability to discriminate matter and spirit is women aren't, you could say, wired like that kind of intelligence. Because otherwise it would be very hard for them to take seriously maintaining a family. It wouldn't be very good for society in one sense. If women were as detached as men from family, if they weren't so emotional, how could they take care of these little kids, these little children? They had to be put into illusion, otherwise they couldn't do it. Unless they were enamored by children. It would be very hard for society to go on.
But chapter 16 in the Bhagavad Gita says that women should be treated as children and their freedom should be restricted just as you restrict a child's freedom.
Most people want to be treated like children nowadays.
And then the women's intelligence.
Therefore it said that women should not be given freedom, but then men shouldn't be given freedom either.
Right, it seemed a little discriminatory towards
women. Yeah, of course, there's some discrimination. But it says women should be given discrimination. So that's one side of it. They should be given, be put into religious principles. Just like this modern society, women are unrestricted. And therefore, their situation is not very good. Because the men, probably, he condemns the women there as being unrestricted, but he also condemns the men of taking advantage of the women. So in that same paragraph, he says both of them. So we have, as a result of unrestricted women and uncontrolled men, we have a hellish situation. Killing animals, killing children, completely hellish. So the women should be restricted, and the men should be self-controlled and restricted too by the instructions of the day. So it's not only the women should be controlled, but the men should do whatever they like. No, it's understood that the men should be completely, you know, they're more likely to have the intelligence that they should restrict themselves. And then the women should follow too. But there's no way to say that the men should be uncontrolled. So to be restricted by an intelligent man who actually knows how to engage the woman in Krishna consciousness, then she'll go back to the spiritual world. So that's not bad. Rather than have so-called freedom for one lifetime and then become an animal in the next lifetime. If we look at the whole Vedic literature, the men are condemned, the women are condemned, the homosexuals are condemned, the heterosexuals are condemned, the blacks are condemned, the whites are condemned, everyone's condemned. If they're engaged in sense gratification. And if they're engaged in Krishna service, then they're all considered to be on the same platform and equal opportunities. So when the women were concerned, especially the early ladies, were concerned, are you packing up?
The sound system.
So when they were concerned that, you know, we're being discriminated against, then Prabhupada said, well, if you think you're a woman, then you're less intelligent. Ladies, the lady devotees, if they thought they were women, then you're less intelligent. Because we're not men and we're not women, we're Krishna servants. And if we think that women and men are the same, I mean, in Kali Yuga, when no, people have no bodily strength, they have no memory, they have nothing. And we're thinking, well, I'm better than you are. But we're all insignificant in Kali Yuga. All we can do is fight over, I'm more insignificant than you are. I'm humble. But no one has it, rather no one has any qualification. Shukadeva Goswami, he heard the 18,000 verses in Srimad Bhagavatam and then repeated them to Parikshit Maharaj in 7 days and nights. And we can't remember, take this half an hour, remember the first verse. And then we forget it a day later. So what is our qualification? What is anyone's qualification? And what to speak of Krishna, who's in every atom, who knows past, present, future. We're all insignificant.